What's up, everybody? Welcome to N Express. This is our celebration episode of our 100 episodes. It's not exactly episode 100, but it is our like long-awaited Hall of Fame episode. We do one every 25 episodes, and so of course we needed to get a couple more entries until we hit that sweet 50 entries in our Hall of Fame. So we're going to really push towards that. Let's see if we can actually hit it. But before any of that, let me introduce my other host, Patrick Murphy.
Hey, Tim.
And, of course, Ricky D.
And just so listeners know, if you want to check out our previous Hall of Fame entries, you can always see the link in every single N Express Nintendo podcast post. So if you actually go to the website, goombastomp.com, you go to one of our podcast posts, underneath there's the links to like iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play. And we're also on SoundCloud, so there's like plenty of ways to listen to our podcast. And also the link to the Hall of Fame show. And I think moving forward, I think we're going to be doing Hall of Fame entries every 20 episodes.
Which is honestly not that ambitious a project. If you think about how many insanely good Nintendo games are out there.
That just means we have to talk about a lot more Nintendo, old Nintendo games. Because the rules, as I understand them, are we had to have discussed it on the podcast.
Yeah, but we don't have to discuss it at length. Like, for example, we did our show of the, what was it, like the 25 best Super Nintendo games. So anything mentioned in that show is fair game, right? So like, even if we briefly talked about a Kirby game, we could include the Kirby game into the Hall of Fame. But normally we do try to stick with games that we sort of like review for at least like 20, 30 minutes.
So it's a little tricky, but you know what's going to really, really help you guys is the fact that we are getting another classic edition console with, again, 20 games, in this case 21 games, and I'm of course talking about the SNES Classic, recently announced, due out in September. How stoked are you guys?
I think that's a great collection. I mean, just looking at the list of games, it's a fantastic collection of games. And there are even a few on there I didn't play. I didn't play the Kirby games on the Super Nintendo. Obviously, there's one big game that nobody played in its completed crazy form anyway.
It's insane that it's there. And any Nintendo nerd knows that Star Fox 2 was canceled before release, despite being complete from what we have gathered. And now we're actually getting it on kind of the proper console.
Yeah, now, Tim, in order to actually play Star Fox 2, you need to complete the first level of the original Star Fox game, and then you get access to Star Fox 2. I think it's absolutely incredible that they've included this game into the package. Like, this actually gives me more of a reason to buy the Super Nintendo NES Mini Classic, whatever you call it. Now, the thing is, we've talked about this when they released the NES Classic Edition, is that for me personally, I already own each and every single one of these games except for Star Fox 2. That said, I really, 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 really want this. The pre-orders haven't gone live anywhere in Canada. I know my cousin Matt, who is one of the editors at Goomba Stomp, he lives in Canada, and he pre-ordered his from the UK. My problem was this happened yesterday, and as Patrick would know, I had no internet access yesterday, so I could not do any pre-orders anywhere, even if it was from the UK, so I'm really bummed out about this. Now, the thing is, I wrote an article about this, which you can find over at goombastomp.com. I just published it like about an hour ago, and it's called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, everything about the Super NES Classic Edition. And I got to tell you guys, a part of me really wants to just order the Japanese version, the Super Famicom version, because first of all, just the actual box, like the box art is beautiful.
It's awesome. I love it.
They also get some additional games, if I'm not mistaken.
So here's they get different games.
Yeah,
they don't have everything we do.
Different games.
No, but they have a lot of games that were never released in North America. For example, they have Fire Emblem Mystery of the Emblem, and they also have Legend of the Mystical Ninja by Konami, which is a game that's really hard to get. So
yeah,
it's like a part of me.
Well, that one's on virtual console, though, so at least you can get that.
But if you try buying the actual physical original like copy for the Super Nintendo, it'll run you like hundreds of dollars on eBay.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's the Super Nintendo. It's my favorite console of all time. So clearly, like, it's got a list of great games. The thing is, and one thing I wrote is like, I don't really have much to complain about. Like, I can nitpick about the fact that you can't use the original Super Nintendo controller because of the port. Like, it's an actual NES Classic port, which kind of sucks. I get it. Not too many people have a Super Nintendo controller. But my biggest complaint is that I feel like there's some games that are missing, and it feels somewhat of an incomplete package. Like, for example, Chrono Trigger, one of the greatest games ever made, is not included, nor is Donkey Kong Country 2, Diddy's Conquest, nor is Final Fantasy 2, ActRaiser, one of my favorite games of all time, and Super yes. Bomberman. Like, how do you forget Super Bomberman, especially when you just released Super Bomberman R? Like, you figure it'll be a good time to put it into the package. So my biggest complaint is just those games missing.
Well, I would say this about Final Fantasy II. They did include Final Fantasy III, which is by far superior to Final Fantasy II. So I guess that's the way they're covering that, and they don't want to overload it. And with Donkey Kong Country, again, they're putting the first one in, so maybe not the second one, because they just don't want to have so many Donkey Kong Country games on there. But ActRaiser, really, I wish you could take out one of the Kirby games, because I believe there's a Kirby golf game on there or something, right? Take that out, and whatever the Kirby Star Course is, and put in ActRaiser. Man, that would have been amazing. Now, as far as Chrono Trigger, yes, that you feel like that goes on a lot of people's best RPGs of all time. However, strangely enough, we're getting Secret of Mana, which, interestingly, that works with a system that comes with two controllers, because that's a multiplayer role-playing game, and I love that game.
Isn't that a three-player game, technically?
Sorry, which game are we talking about?
Secret of Mana.
It's three players.
Yeah. Okay, but I mean, most people didn't have the four-player converter
for Super Nintendo. So. And speaking of which, the NES Classic Edition, like, the biggest complaint about that system was the actual controller, because the cable wire was only 3 feet. They've made it 5 feet. I still think they could have made it 6 feet. 5 feet is a lot better than 3 feet. I'm good with 5 feet. Also, with the Super Nintendo Classic Mini Edition, you get two controllers instead of one controller, which is kind of good, because, like, one of the problems with the original was that, not that I have it because it was sold out everywhere, but it only came with one controller, and you couldn't use the original NES controller, as far as I know.
No, you couldn't. And this is the SNES Classic has so many multiplayer games on it. They really needed to include that second controller, and I'm glad they did, because, I mean, Contra 3 is awesome with one person, but it's super awesome with two people. There are several games like that. And again, Secret of Mana, the full experience can really only be had with multiplayer. So obviously, the Super Nintendo has so many great games that you could always make a case for other games being on the list. But I think they did a really good job of balancing, genres and kind of making it a well-rounded selection.
Yeah, well, like I mentioned that in my article. I was like, just about anyone can make a list of games that they want to see included. But those five, or at least four of the five that I mentioned, should really be on the list. Like, I mean, we do have two Kirby games, like Kirby Superstar and Kirby's Dream Course. And I could have easily replaced
one. We have to give them
those.
Credit for what we did get in the box. And we don't know the full story. There are maybe like some sort of rights issues with, I think Square still holds Chrono Trigger's rights.
But they also hold Secret of Mana. So, I mean, Square clearly is represented, because Final Fantasy 3 or 6 and Secret of Mana are on there. So I think it was probably just like, okay, what is going to work best in this thing? And I think they probably went with Secret of Mana over Chrono Trigger simply because of the multiplayer. And then they give you a more traditional RPG with Final Fantasy 3. So that was probably their reasoning behind that.
I know, but it's weird, because Final Fantasy was in the original, and here we get Final Fantasy III, but we're not getting Final Fantasy II. So it's like, it's missing. And Chrono Trigger, like, I mean, to be fair, all of these games you can play on the Wii U Virtual Console Store and or the Wii Virtual Console Store, and a lot of them are available in the 3DS, and they did release the physical version, like the remastered of Chrono Trigger, on the 3DS, which I got. But here's the thing, okay, like, I'm excited, but I'm also frustrated, and that was, like, the point of my article, is what I do not understand, guys, and we've talked about this in the past, is why can't Nintendo find a way to give fans first access to making the pre-orders? Like it's so frustrating to know that, like, it gets announced, like, in the UK, it was sold out, at least the pre-orders, within, like, a minute, right? And so it's all sold out already, at least in the UK, because I don't know if they've done pre-orders in the US, but they haven't done pre-orders in Canada.
Nope. And, nothing. They have a page on the US Amazon, but there are no pre-orders so far.
Okay, but it's so frustrating, because, like, what I was writing in my article is, like, why can't they find a way for us fans, like, people who actually play Nintendo games, people who actually own, like, the Wii U or the Nintendo Switch, to pre-order the system before anybody else? Because what's happening is a bunch of scalpers are buying out all of these systems, and they're selling it on eBay for, like, $1,000. And it's just, I mean, I hate to use the word it's not fair because I feel like I'm whining, but it's not fair. And the thing is, like, what I wrote in my article is, like, I wrote, like, you know, it's not something I need. Like, I don't need this. It's not water. It's not food. It's not air. But it's something I want. And as a longtime fan of Nintendo, it pisses me off that scalpers seem to find ways to get a hold of all of these consoles and us, the fans, get screwed. And there's a lot of reasons for it. I mean, like, I'm sure you guys know how scalpers work, but, you know, you could have some dude, like a manager working at Best Buy, and he decides not to put, like, 20 Super NES minis on the actual store shelf, and he just sells it to his friend who scalps it online, and they split the profit.
And they also have, like, they have ways of getting stuff first before anybody else can even make an order. Really, what Nintendo should have done, you know, we're all probably Nintendo members of My Nintendo, right?
Like, this is the solution. Guessing. Nintendo, please, for the love of God and all that is holy, and, like, please just, on your firstborn child, Mario, listen.
Well, they should have just put in, we all got an email. Anybody who's a member of My Nintendo got an email announcing and this isn't a press release, it was just an email announcing the SNES Classic. There should have been a pre-order button right there. And that's for all your Nintendo fans. They're all My Nintendo people. They clearly enjoy your company, have registered with you. They're building up coins and all these things that are kind of crap for the most part, really. But that should have had the pre-order button. Only one per customer, it could have said, you know, one per My Nintendo account. And that's it. Like, we all would have gotten an opportunity. All the biggest fans, the ones who are really loyal to Nintendo, who really like are into the company and into that company's games, would have had a chance.
Let's take it a step further. You need a My Nintendo account, and that message is only sent to your 3DS and your Switch. Like, actually find the people who are going to... Here's the problem, though. If people know that's happening, you guys, they're going to create My Nintendo accounts and scalp them anyway. That's what's going to happen.
Okay, Tim, like, there is no bulletproof plan, but the thing is, you can't do that, because if I'm at work, I'm not at home playing, like, ARMS or whatever on my Nintendo Switch, you know? Like who's to say I'm actually going to access my Switch that day before pre-orders are already sold out? And I think an email is more than enough. I mean, it's more than what they're giving us. And that's exactly what I wrote in my article. I'm like, you know, all I'm asking is for Nintendo to give us fans the chance to actually purchase these items first. Because the thing is, it's not like the Nintendo Switch. It's not like the Wii. You know, back in the days when the Wii was sold out, you knew eventually it would restock. You know, it wasn't like they were going to stop selling Wiis or Nintendo Switch consoles. But here, in this case, it's different because they've said this is a limited edition, which is fine. I don't care if they send out 100,000, 200,000, a million, or even 10. All I want is the chance to buy it. A better chance.
Right. And they shipped 2.3 million NES Classics, I believe. They said that they're producing this in significantly larger quantities. But the problem is that nobody knows what that means. They didn't say how many there would be. And we do know that, like they said, we have no plans to distribute this past 2017. So everybody's on pins and needles right now. They're all like, when is it going to go live here in the U.S.? And you know that, like you said, it's going to be scalpers that get a large quantity of these things. And actual people that just want them aren't going to stand a chance. Some will get lucky and a lot of people won't, but we're all standing by just waiting. They're not telling us when we can actually pay for this thing. It should have just been like, if they just would have done the email and said, here, buy this now, then that would have been the best solution possible. Then whatever makes it to the brick and mortars makes it to the brick and mortars, and that's it. And then it's a free for all, fine. But at least the fans would have gotten their chance.
And I think this is something that Nintendo really, really needs to work on, because it's an ongoing issue, not only with these limited edition consoles, but with regular products. We're going to talk about another special edition in a little bit, and that's going to be the same issue. We recently got three new Link Amiibos that were, I'm not kidding you, each individual Amiibo was exclusive to a totally different retailer, which means they're all impossible to get. So this is an ongoing issue. Nintendo really needs to work on their communication with stuff that isn't a video game. Like, it's cool that we know when Samus Returns comes out. Why can we not get clear dates and announcements of things like Amiibo and other products? Why is it so like, it'll probably be coming out this time. There might be a pre-order. I don't know. They just like don't seem to know.
The thing about the Amiibos, I don't have a problem if, say, Best Buy has the exclusive to Majora's Mask, and I don't know, like Target has the exclusive to whatever, whatever. I don't see that as being a huge problem. It's kind of a hassle for us as fans because you have to shop at different retailers, but you know, they're trying to form a relationship with that specific like company, like be it Best Buy or Target or who have you. That's not my issue. My issue
okay,
is...
but just think about that for a hot second. You're literally saying, hey, Nintendo, it's cool if you create a cool relationship with a retailer, but fuck the consumer. Make them go to three different stores? That's fair?
I mean, look, Nintendo...
It's horrible. It's a horrible way to treat people.
Nintendo's not our friends, and the thing is, it's still a business, and that if that's what the retailers want, like, I mean, I don't know, but that, like... That's not even my biggest problem. Like, it just feels like, I mean, I guess people were scalping Amiibo. I guess they still are to some degree. A lot of Amiibo are sold out. Like, the Wind Waker Amiibo was completely sold out. I still do not have it. So I can't complete my Amiibo collection without the Wind Waker Amiibo. But it's kind of, like, different. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, it does annoy me. Don't get me wrong. I think that this just frustrates me. Because, like, this is, like...
It's way cooler than an Amiibo.
Well, no, it's like, yeah, it's like with an Amiibo, you know, like you can unlock whatever in Breath of the Wild with any Amiibo, right? Like maybe a specific Amiibo will give you cooler items, but you can use just about any Amiibo to unlock, be it a weapon or food or rupees or what have you, a horse, you know what I mean? But like this is like a whole entire like system.
But wait. I have a chance. I actually have a fighting chance with this because I can choose to go line up at night. It's a dumb decision, but I can choose to go do that. When you split something up three different directions, say Best Buy, Amazon, and I think the other one was GameStop, I can't go to all three locations and line up and hope to get one. Not to mention that Best Buy and Amazon both did online, and so the moment they went on sale, they were gone because people used their bots that magically order these in massive quantities. So I wasn't given a chance. With this console, I can go to a retailer like, I don't know, Target or Walmart or whatever you have around you, and I can actually wait and probably get one because they're going to ship it to the brick-and-mortar stores. With some of these products, they don't even get that far, and that's just a dumb idea.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, the bottom line is if they just gave us Nintendo fans a better chance to get these items, that's all we're asking for, you know, and if that means sending us an email saying you're going to release like five Amiibo and pre-orders go on sale like in an hour or two, fine. Like, it just gives me a better chance. That's all I'm asking for. Like, it just, it's really, really frustrating. Like, I mean, you can't really necessarily blame Nintendo for what scalpers are doing, but Nintendo is clearly aware of what is happening, you know? And
I don't think you're going to blame them, but they're definitely helping scalpers, and that's the problem.
Yeah, totally.
They have to be aware of it, and the people that actually want to pay money to get it aren't given the opportunity. And that's what's a shame, is people who don't want the product are getting it and abusing that opportunity.
Yeah, I know, Patrick, I think it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago, you sort of like made some sort of comparison to going to like a concert, like your favorite concert, and like you want to get tickets, right? And you know, there's only so many people they sell out. There's only so many people you can jam pack into a stadium. So, you know, there's 20,000 tickets, you know, first 20,000 people get tickets. Of course, there's scalpers to deal with. But like, so like, I don't mind if it's a limited edition. It's not my problem. Like, a lot of people are complaining that it's limited. Like, they want them to send out like 20 billion of these consoles so you have a chance. Like, I don't have a problem with that. Like, I actually kind of like the fact that it's limited. Like, if everything was readily available to everyone, it wouldn't feel as special. Let's admit that that is true, right? It's just, I don't know. It's just frustrating that I just feel like I don't have a chance. That's all.
Well, and Nintendo is horribly, horribly afraid of inventory. And so, I mean, they see things like the Animal Crossing Amiibo and they're like, never, ever again. Mm-hmm. And that was partially on them for not correctly understanding what people like about Animal Crossing. We like in-game stuff in Animal Crossing. I don't really care about the characters. I can't speak for everyone, but that's just, you know, what I've seen. But yeah, I don't know. I'm really hoping they just learn the communication. I think that My Nintendo is the proper solution, and I think an email would do the trick. Sure, people would try to abuse that, but I just Nintendo, give us a fighting chance. Those that actually really want the product, that want to, you know, as Nintendo collectors or Nintendo fans just want to participate, give us a fighting chance. That's all we're asking, including for things like Transition Time, the special edition of Samus Returns, which recently got announced. Other regions have way cooler editions, including the Spanish Legacy Edition, which is unbelievably cool. But Ricky, tremendous props for guessing this right.
Yeah, I said like the next Metroid game would get a special edition physical box set, which we got. The problem is Europe has the amazing special edition, which, god damn it, it comes with like a download code for the Nintendo 3DS, a steelbook styled after the original Metroid 2 cartridge, a Samus Archive sound selection CD featuring 25 tracks from across the Metroid series. It comes with like a pin and a 40-page art book.
It's pretty ridiculous what they're getting. I mean, Europe has always sort of outdone the U.S. a little bit, I feel like. But, you know, there are complaints on both sides. We, the U.S., North America, got a great Breath of the Wild special edition, whereas Europe did not. It's always a back and forth with special editions. I don't know why they're not more uniform. I don't know why they're, why are special editions regional? And some of them get better stuff than other places. Why isn't North America and Europe basically getting the exact same special editions of everything? Or, you know, or the, just the Western Hemisphere period. Like, why? Why do they have to break these things up?
It's legitimately something to do with demand. And
are they saying there's not a demand for a Metroid special edition here? Like, is
part of it they have to incentivize. The price of video games, especially in regions like Australia, is a lot higher. So they really have to incentivize people going out and buying a game. And sure. So often they get way cooler editions. Australia in particular often gets crazy cool editions of games to really incentivize. Like, please go buy this. We know it will cost you the same amount that you spent on your car, but please.
But you know, those, they would also sell those special editions here. So that is still more money for them. I mean, unless they're losing a little bit on, like, would they be losing money by packaging a special edition here for $90 or whatever?
Not exactly sure, but I know that I've heard from legitimate sources that it is a big issue with some sort of demand. And in general, North America doesn't tend to go as crazy for really cool stuff that they should go crazy for.
And that's the thing, like, they could charge a fortune for this Metroid Special Edition, and it would sell. Like, it definitely would sell. So I don't understand. You know, the Metroid Prime collection, remember when that came out on the Wii? Like, that was a nice collection. As you know, it had a steel box, it had an art book, it had, like, this, some kind of card in or something. I still have mine. But you, in the Resident Evil 4 Special Edition, same thing. It was, like, the great, great Special Edition. Those things sold out, and now they're completely invaluable. But the same thing would happen here. They could easily do that. I just don't understand. Like, I can see wanting to have a special edition to increase demand in other regions, but that doesn't mean, like, that thing would definitely sell here too. So why not make that extra money? It can't be costing you $50 to produce the items that are in those things. Must be making a profit on it.
We are still getting a special edition. It just so happens that Europe has the coolest special edition. But it, like you said, like, we got the incredible, like, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild special edition. Like, I mean, this has been happening since, like, the days of, like, vinyl records and VHS cassettes. I mean, look at the box art for a VHS cassette of a horror film in Europe and compare it to North America. Like, it's always way better, way cooler, way nicer. Like, those are collectibles. Like, you can pick up a VHS copy of, like, Evil Dead 2, the PAL version from, like, Europe, and you could sell it for, like, hundreds of dollars because it was never released in North America, and it has, like, an extended, like, cut of a scene or a director's cut or what have you, something that wasn't included here. I think the thing is, again, I don't have a big issue with this, if only because of the internet. Like, you can order from the UK. Like, Matt ordered the Super Nintendo PAL version, like the Super NES Mini PAL version. He ordered it yesterday from the UK, and he lives in Calgary, you know, so he had a chance to actually buy it. Like, we, because of the internet, we can still buy this. The point in the article that I wrote, which you can find a Goomba Style, which is called, "By embracing a physical format, Nintendo would give fans an incentive to buy more." Like, you know, we've talked about this plenty of times on the podcast. Like, I'm not saying they have to do it for each and every single game. I'm not saying that I want them to make everything like extremely limited and hard to get, and I do not want everything to be super expensive. But it just goes to show that especially Nintendo fans, they will buy collectibles. And they should just, like, I mean, Nintendo is doing something that PlayStation and Xbox are not doing. They are embracing a physical format. And let's not forget that the Nintendo Switch does not use Blu-rays. It's not a CD or a disc. It's a cartridge, which to me is great because it means it loads faster. You can't scratch it. Like, everything about a cartridge is way better, in my opinion, than an actual Blu-ray disc. And it gives me more of a reason to want to buy the physical copy as opposed to a digital copy. And Nintendo fans love to collect things. So they should just, like, keep on embracing the physical format because it's something that their competition isn't doing. And that's what Nintendo wants to do. They want to do things that the competition isn't doing so that they stand out. So, like, what I don't understand is why didn't we get, like, or maybe we will, but a special edition for Splatoon 2 or even ARMS? Why don't they bring back game manuals, cool artwork, posters, like fold-out posters that you get when you actually buy the physical copy? Anything that gives us a little bit of bonus as opposed to buying it digital.
I mean, that would all be great. I'd love to see manuals come back, and I understand why. Maybe, okay, they don't want to spend the extra dollars. They're already spending a little bit more to make cartridges. Fine. But when it comes to something like a special edition, and you don't want a special edition for every game. I don't care about if, you know, Kirby's Planet Robobot had a special edition with a Kirby mech figure. Some people might, but I don't think that there's anything overly special about Kirby Planet Robobot that demands a special edition. But this is the return of Metroid after years to a Nintendo-produced 2D side-scrolling Metroid. It's a big deal. This is kind of something that fans were celebrating after E3. It was a huge topic of discussion. Everybody's excited about the Metroid games coming. This is the kind of game that deserves a special edition. It deserves a thunderous entrance back onto the video game market. Everybody wants to celebrate the return of Metroid. Give us a party. And this special edition is that the European one is a huge party. The North American special edition is just the game and a CD. That's not exactly.
All I wanted was the soundtrack, and I got it, so I'm happy.
Well, I want that special edition from Europe, but I agree with you, Patrick. I think they're missing out. And one of the things I pointed out in my article is that, like, the beauty about buying physical copies is, for example, and I'm sure you guys can relate to this, I became a Nintendo fan because my older brother had a Nintendo Entertainment System, and he passed it down to me, and he introduced me to Nintendo by me physically seeing the system lying around in our house and watching him play, and it's always in my sight. I always want to play the system, own the system, and become a Nintendo fan and play video games. You don't get that with digital copies, okay? Like, nobody's going to become, like, future generations aren't going to become huge, like, Nintendo fans in the same way we did because their dad or their mom or their older sibling has, like, a bunch of digital copies of Nintendo games stored away in a computer and or in a system that is, like, stored away in a closet. It's not the same. Like, the feeling I get when I load up my Nintendo Entertainment System and I boot up, say, like, The Legend of Zelda or Blaster Master or any of these games, it's a feeling that I just don't get when I play the Switch. I love my Switch, but it's different, right? And, like, I feel like future generations are going to have the exact same feeling when they load up Breath of the Wild on the Nintendo Switch in, like, 20 years' time. It's going to feel the exact same way it does for us when we load up Legend of Zelda on the NES. And it just, like, that's the thing about Nintendo. Like, Nintendo is this beloved company. And it's sort of like it's passed on from generation to generation. You know, Tim's a Pokemon fan. His kids are going to be Pokemon fans. They're going to be playing all the Pokemon games. He's going to pass down all of his games to his kids and so on and so forth. And it's just like there's something special about it. And you can't get that with digital. And I know digital is sort of like not just the future, but the now, because everyone's moving towards digital. But I still, I don't think in our lifetime, physical copies will ever completely disappear. It's just like vinyl records. They are still popular, especially amongst collectors. But the bottom line is Nintendo fans love to collect things. I think you're right, Patrick. They missed a golden opportunity to release that same box set here in North America because it's been 10 years since we had a Metroid game. People will buy it, and it gives them more reason to buy Metroid. Like, who's going to choose to buy any digital game on a Nintendo Switch or a Nintendo 3DS over that special edition Metroid box set if you can afford it?
No way. Exactly. Well,
Something I want to bring up is, like, not really an honest counter because I buy more special editions than I ever should. And I'm totally 100% with you in terms of physical copies. My earliest memory of video games, period, is physical copies. I remember my first video game that I played was Link's Awakening. It's still my favorite game. And I remember the day that I saw that beautiful golden cardboard box sitting on the counter. And that's what got me invested in the first place. I saw it, just like you were saying, Ricky. And I was like, what is this? This is amazing. And that's something that stuck with me. And I do want to pass that on to my children. But do you guys think that maybe for Nintendo, they're trying to divide up what would have been a special edition nowadays? Like, do you think that they're trying not to package in Amiibo with the collector's editions to give everyone a better opportunity to buy the Amiibo if they just want that, or to buy the game and some of the other stuff? Because with Splatoon, I've noticed that there's some different products out on the market that are the limited edition Splatoon 2 controller or Joy-Cons. And that kind of seems like stuff that would be packaged with a game in the past, but maybe they didn't think that was a fair opportunity for everyone to get it. I don't know. Part of me wonders if that's kind of a different direction they're going.
You can't package a Pro Controller for Splatoon with the game. The Pro Controller itself is over $100.
They've done it in the past where there's a controller packed in with a game.
They could do it for a game like Pokken Tournament. Like, for fighting games, yes, it works because of the whole, like, esports phenomenon. Like, people just, like, eat up games like Smash and, like, Pokken Tournament and, you know, fighting games whatsoever. But, I mean, like, I don't know. Like,
the Wiimote was cheap, too. Like, it came with Zelda with Skyward Sword. The Wiimote was much cheaper.
I don't know. Part of me wonders, though, if they would have in the past packed something like a Pro Controller Splatoon 2 themed with Splatoon 2, and they're just kind of trying to separate everything so everyone can get it or not get it. And I don't know, it probably not is the answer, but I would like to think that Nintendo has some sort of rhyme or reason as to what gets the special edition and what doesn't. But I do know that they are the only company that has really, really cool anniversary sets that are of note. Like, we did get, you know, the 25th anniversary of Mario back on the Wii, which was really, really cool. Or was it 20th anniversary? I don't even remember anymore, you guys. And they do a lot of cool stuff like that that's not even a new game, and they repackage it and make it all pretty and exciting. So we can't complain too much, but more is welcome.
Yes, we can. We can always complain too much.
I think part of the problem is the world thinks that Nintendo hates Metroid, and the U.S. really likes it. Maybe Japan doesn't, but we like our Metroid, so give us cool Metroid shit.
Apparently Europe likes it better than us. That's the lesson that I've learned.
To be fair, I did end my article by stating that Nintendo is doing a very, very good job in giving fans these special editions. Like, it's not just for Breath of the Wild, but even like a game like Fire Emblem Echoes had a beautiful special edition. Now you have the Metroid special edition. They do release like Amiibo. Like, they do a lot more than companies like Sony and Microsoft when it comes to releasing special editions. And it's because they can, because fans want it. They buy it. The problem is they always get sold out.
Mm-hmm. Which is okay. That I'm okay with that. But like we were talking about before, it's going to happen. They're going to get sold out. But, you know, with games, you usually have the ability to pre-order, too. So you know when a game is coming out, and you can... you pretty much know when the pre-orders usually go up almost as soon as the game is, you know, the release date's been announced. So that gives you a chance to get the special edition, right? But yeah, I think, look, it's obviously up by region. I wish Nintendo of America fought a little harder to get us those special editions. There must be some reason that they don't. I don't think it's because they disrespect the North American audience or something.
No.
But it sucks to have to look at, especially with something like Metroid. Look, I consider very few special editions. I'm not like Tim here. I didn't buy the Zelda one, and even though I love Zelda, but a Zelda game comes out, you know, every few years. So I didn't, you know, I don't always feel the need to buy a Zelda special edition. But a Metroid one, you know, it's a little bit different. It just feels different to me, and I really, really, really wish I had one. And then looking at that metal case that looks like an old NES cartridge. Oh my God, I just wanted that really bad.
So wait, is it sold out?
I don't know if it's sold out in Europe, but I'm not going to be able to play the PAL version. I mean, the 3DS is still region locked, you know, so it's not like on the Switch. So I don't really see the point. I don't want to buy two versions of that game, because that version I won't be able to play. Yeah, I'll get all the stuff with it, but I I'm also like somewhat, I have somewhat some common sense, and then I don't want to buy two copies of a game, only one of which I'll be able to play.
Well, Patrick, you know what you could do? You could do what I did. I bought
Zelda
a Legend. No, I bought a Legend of Zelda flask, and so it's actually shaped exactly like the original NES cartridge, like exactly. Except you can put your alcohol in it and take it on the go.
Hey, you can put alcohol on the original cartridge.
Then I'll just look like I'm blowing the cartridge and really I'm taking a nip of, you know, some fine whiskey.
It only cost me $20.
That sounds pretty cool, actually.
I think the moral of the story is that nerds like cool stuff, Nintendo. Give us more. And also bring back gold cartridges while we're talking about it. Because those are the best. The real moral here. Anyway, so I think that does it for what I'm going to call the N-Express crowd whines about the stuff we're not getting or that's hard for us to get that we really want. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to do the Hall of Fame. What is this, part four? Is this our fourth Hall of Fame episode?
That is right.
So stick around. When we come back, some of the best games ever are getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. So don't go anywhere. Welcome back to N-Express. We are at our main event, Hall of Fame entries. You guys, we've already got some 30 games entered into the Hall of Fame, but, you know, there are so many classic Nintendo games. There's so much opportunity, and we have talked about a lot of games, so hopefully we're not fighting too hard over the best of the best games ever made, but let's go ahead and induct some stuff into our Hall of Fame. Beginning with Patrick, I know you're going to steal one of mine right away, but I'll allow it. Go ahead.
It's one of my favorite games in the last like 10 years, easily, I think. I love this game so much that I have completed it now. I've 100%ed it now 3 times through, maybe 4. God, I can't remember.
So you've earned it.
I enjoy playing the hell out of this game. It seriously like reinvigorated my love for the franchise again, but even more so than after, you know, Skyward Sword. I'm going to put in Legend of Zelda: A Link Between Worlds.
I don't think anyone here is going to contest that at all. The game is amazing. It's a return to form, which sounds crazy because every Zelda game is good, but a lot of the portable console titles have been sort of in the shadow of other Zelda games. They almost just seem to be trying to recreate A Link to the Past in a way. And this game very clearly tried to do that, but also added some entirely different puzzles that completely changed the way you look at the map. And it was mind-bendingly great. So I totally endorse this.
Lots of Zelda in the Hall of Fame, guys. Mm-hmm. Just saying.
Yeah, do you not remember that I was saying that I want every Zelda game in the Hall of Fame? So, Ricky, I'll let you get second pick. Kind of risky, because there's going to be some fighting going on for who gets to do what. But go ahead, Rick, whenever you're ready.
Yeah, now I don't think you guys are going to fight over my picks, because you guys are picking a lot of Zelda and Mario games, and I'm going to do something completely different. So, we talked about Kirby a lot this year, because it was his 25th anniversary, and I'm actually going to be putting Kirby's Adventure into the Hall of Fame, which was released for the NES, 1993. And that's what pretty much put Kirby on the map. I don't know if you guys have played this game recently or have played it at all, but what looks like a simple game at first is really complicated. Like, on its surface, it seems like a straightforward 8-bit platformer, but if you dig deeper, there's just so much to discover. Like, hidden rooms, secret exits, tons of side quests. The platforming stages are great for its time. It's one of those like rare late generation games that just kind of like a lot of people haven't played because it came out, you know, it was like the swan song for the NES in a way. A lot of people haven't played it, but it's a really, really good game. It's one of the best on the NES. And I don't know, man. Like, I don't think we have any Kirby games in the Hall of Fame. So for me, if we're going to include one, what better way to put Kirby into the Hall of Fame than with the NES Classic? I love this game. Like, the pseudo 3D backgrounds, the parallax scrolling, HAL Laboratory, like, did such an amazing job in this game. And it just does not get enough love.
Yeah, I've never played that one. That was, you know, at that point I had moved on to the Super Nintendo. So that one kind of passed me by, but I, you know, it's one of those things where if they release it on the Switch, they're probably not going to have Virtual Console this year. It's Kirby's, you know, anniversary, but if they did put it out on Virtual Console on the Switch, I would have picked it up for sure.
I love the plot synopsis. It reads, "The dream spring, the source of all dreams, has dried up, and now everyone is subjected to their worst nightmares every time they go to sleep. But it's up to you, Kirby, to save the day."
Love that. Sounds it. Like a horrible situation, a nightmarish situation, a horror story. I know.
It is.
I kind of want them to make a horror Kirby game, or just like a really creepy, weird Kirby game.
They did. It's called The Blob. Well, that was pink goo, right?
They're basically the same exact thing.
Yeah. They consume everything. Yeah. The movie The Blob. It's a pink blob of goo that consumes everything in its path. That's Kirby right there.
I'm a big fan of the remake, by the way. But anyways, moving on.
Which one?
So, the one from the 80s.
Okay.
That one is actually pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, it's really fun.
I like the one with Steve McQueen, the original.
Love Steve McQueen. Moving forward, we're not putting Steve McQueen into the Hall of Fame.
Or are we? My first pick, just kidding, is not Steve McQueen. But I think I'm going to go for an immediate instant classic, so also on the 3DS. And this is one that I had to think about for a little bit, really wondering if it was worth it or not. But I think that Pokemon Sun and Moon was a true evolution for the series. It rethought what it meant to travel a region of Pokemon. It brought in some amazing new mechanics. And just like Breath of the Wild, it really expanded the world and kind of let you loose in it. Sure, there are still some confines that I wish they would let us out of. And I wish the game were a little harder, but the SOS system, the new grass system in which you can find Pokemon, I think it just made it an all-around phenomenal game. I already loved my 3DS, and that was just another enormously great title. So Sun and Moon, instant classic. I think it deserves a spot in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, it's only the second Pokemon game I ever played. But so I don't know how it compares or whether or not it was a major breakthrough with the other ones. I only played Yellow and then Sun and Moon. So, yes, it was quite different from Yellow. I'll give you that. And it was a very good game. I actually completed Sun and Moon where I did not complete Yellow. So, it was a very fun game. And I'd be willing to check out other Pokemon based upon that.
Yeah, no. And I think, you know, going back is always an interesting dilemma, because often what you're given in older entries, they just don't feel as clean and easy to play. And Pokemon's gone a really long way to make it just super easy and buttery smooth to play a game. So there's some hesitancy, but I would say, like, when Gold and Silver come out, maybe pick those up on the 3DS if you want like another fun retro experience. But Sun and Moon is about as good as it gets, so
I don't want another fun retro experience. I'll stick with the new versions of Pokemon. When they release their one on the Switch, that's what I'll be looking towards. Enough of Yellow that I'm not sure that I want to go back to the classics.
No pressure, Game Freak, but hurry up with that Switch business.
That's right. Otherwise, you're going to lose my hard-earned dollars. All right. I guess for my next one, we haven't talked about this game too much, but you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe it was brought up during the best Super NES games. So I'm going to pull from that if that is legitimately, like, if I can do that. I do think this is one of the best games of all time, and I'd love to give it a full discussion on the show. But I am going to, and Rick, you actually brought it up earlier as one of the games that should have been on the SNES Classic, which is ActRaiser. I think that is one of the most worthy, I don't know if it's underrated because everybody does seem to love it, but it's one of the most, it doesn't get talked about nearly enough for being one of the best games on the Super Nintendo. And it's a game that combines different different genres, and it does it so well, something that so few video games have ever done, ever did before, or have ever done since. Like, it is one of the most, it's unique games in existence for what it does, giving you sort of the action slashing platforming side of things, in which it's very competent. I wouldn't call it, it's not classic in the platforming sense, but it's very good. And it also gives you kind of a god simulator in a way, where you're building towns and nurturing, you know, people's crops, providing rain and you know, sometimes destroying their houses out of need to expand the town. But yes, you do murder your populace occasionally. It's like culling the herd, I guess. But yeah, it's sort of a very, very weird game. Looks gorgeous. As some of one of the best soundtracks in the SNES. I just think I've always loved that game. I've written about this game before. It's just one of my favorites of all time. And I think it deserves a place in the Hall of Fame just to be recognized for being one of the coolest games ever, with one of the coolest titles ever.
If I ever had a huge budget, like millions of dollars, and I can make a movie based on a video game, my number one choice would be Earthbound. My number two choice would be ActRaiser.
Dude, love, yes, that game. Amazing.
Yeah. Can't disagree. Love it. One of the best soundtracks on the Super Nintendo. Maybe my favorite soundtrack on a Super Nintendo. But you know what else we could put into the Hall of Fame? It's Super Castlevania IV, which is a game that Tim isn't necessarily fond of, but I think it's an amazing game. It was marketed as a sequel to the original three games released on the Nintendo Entertainment System, but it's really more of a remake. And I think that Masahiro Uno just did such an amazing job because he was free from the restrictions of the 8-bit hardware, and he was also given carte blanche to just do whatever he wanted to do with this game. So him, along with Konami, I think delivered one of the most interesting games for the Super Nintendo. I love, like, the groundbreaking Mode 7 effects. The gameplay mechanics felt so unique for the time. I love the soundtrack. I think, you know, speaking of soundtracks, Super Castlevania IV also has one of the best soundtracks of any game released on the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. And by the way, that console, guys, not only does it have, like, some of the greatest games ever made, but it has, like, the greatest soundtracks ever made.
Yeah.
Like, Chrono Trigger, Earthbound, Super Castlevania IV, ActRaiser, so on so forth. So, I don't know, I just love how Konami took advantage of the 16-bit hardware and really created some truly unique environments. It's sort of like jaw-dropping, even to this day, playing level 4, which is the rotating room. We reviewed this not too long ago, and I played it from start to finish. And even now, 2017, when I got to level 4, I was just like amazed. Like, just amazed. But I think the reason why I like this game the most, apart from maybe Symphony of the Night, is it's just because of, like, the gameplay, like the weapon mechanics, the way Simon's able to move. Like, I know, Tim, you complained about the movement a bit, but for its time, like, compared to the original three games, it's just so much better. So yeah, I love Super Castlevania IV. Not my favorite game in the series, but on my list of top three, guaranteed. I think it deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Like, we don't have any Castlevania games.
I'm totally with you on that one. I think it's definitely the best of the traditional Castlevanias. You can always rank Symphony of the Night as better than that, but it was also a different kind of Castlevania. Of the traditional ones, Super Castlevania IV is the best by far.
Well,
it's a great game.
Admittedly, I played Symphony of the Night before I played any of the older Castlevania games, so it's largely on me for my, like, not super...
Yeah,
enthusiastic attitude. It's kind of my fault, if I'm being honest. So I have nothing against the game. Just be Symphony of the Night or be nothing. I don't know.
Ouch.
I'm totally kidding.
Bloodstained.
Yeah, I'm totally kidding. But Bloodstained is going to be amazing, and cannot wait for that. So, and I absolutely love the lore of Castlevania. It's something that I've followed for no reason. So. I'm totally cool with this decision, but there are other games that I think have been deserving of a spot on our Hall of Fame that we just hadn't talked about, and so I had to wait quietly and schemingly until there was an opportunity, but now we have done a top 10 of just about every Nintendo console besides the portable ones, and so I can draw from those, and on our final list of the best N64 games, I believe it ended at number 3, and that was Super Smash Bros., which we already have Super Smash Bros. For Wii U, and for 3DS, which is fine. I can totally get behind that. But the game that started it all, that maybe has the best core roster of any fighting game ever, like, can you get better than all of those Nintendo heroes being thrown into a fighter?
Yeah, it's called the Wii U version.
Okay, but the true core of Nintendo's heart is all in the original Smash Bros. It was limited, and at the time, it was phenomenal. I think it's still one of the most fun Smash games to play. It just has its own unique charm and feel that I don't think any other Smash game can quite match, just in terms of its quirks, its funny weightiness, the amusing graphics. It was just a different time, and there are so many great memories. I absolutely adore this game. I think it's just one of the best games ever made. Sure, later games built on it and are a lot cleaner, and I think Smash Bros. Now is one of the best balanced games ever, but this game started it all. I think it deserves a mention, and so I think it easily deserves a spot in our Hall of Fame. It's such a good game. I love it.
It's probably the worst in the series, but you know, the Hall of Fame isn't necessarily about the best games ever. It also could be the most influential games, and Smash Brothers was certainly influential.
But at the same time, if you get a bunch of millennials together, give them some alcohol, plug in an N64, that game is as entertaining and more approachable than Smash these days. I think.
Okay, wait. I have a problem with what you just said. You do not need alcohol to enjoy that game. You just need your friends around.
No, you don't need alcohol at all, but it helps with the fun party vibe, and the game gets incredibly ridiculous when there's alcohol involved, so I'm not going to frown upon it.
All right, kids, we don't encourage you to drink. Do not listen to what Tim just said. No, it's a great pick. I mean, look, I'm glad you put it in, because it's kind of weird that the Wii U version made it in first, but I think when I picked the Wii U version, I just assumed that you were going to pick the original game, but you were just too busy putting Zelda games into the Hall of Fame, so it never made it until now. So yeah, I like it.
I don't know that we had talked about it yet. I don't remember.
We talked, maybe not. You're right.
I don't know. It's a game
that N64 list came pretty early on, so my guess is that we probably did talk about it on that.
So maybe I just wasn't drawing from top tens just then, but focusing on the games that we actually had extensive mm-hmm. dialogue about, because we have, you know, games that we focus on for a full episode. But anyway, it needed to be on the list now, so it is.
Sure. All right, I'm going to, for my next pick, I'm going to jump ahead in time to what has been called by one of our editors as an objectively bad game. I'm going with Wii Sports. That game, if we're talking about influential games or just cultural phenomenons, Wii Sports is one of the biggest in the entire history of the medium of video games. Wii Sports caught on fire. It was incredibly fun to play. It sold everybody on the Wii, on the motion controls, at least for a little while, till we realized we didn't like waggling for everything. But for a moment there, it was huge, just like Pokemon Go or something. It inspired everybody.
Including the dog.
Exactly. Dogs could play it too. You just had to put a Wiimote in their mouth. They could probably box or something. But it got grandmas off the couch playing video games. It got everybody. It was great for date night or whatever, or parties. Everybody wanted to play the Wii back then, and it was simply because of Wii Sports, and almost exclusively Wii Bowling, really. I feel like that was the game that everybody wanted to do. But yeah, it was super fun. It was super simple. It remains one of the highest selling games of all time, probably because it was packed into the Wii, obviously because it was packed into the Wii. But regardless, it is one of the best concepts that any company has ever come up with to sell their system and sell somebody on the idea of a very, very peculiar system. They did it marvelously. They pulled it off flawlessly. It may not have been the deepest game ever, but it was a ton of fun, and the results speak for themselves.
I'm not going to disagree. It's not exactly my favorite game, but hey, you just pretty much nailed it. It kind of like sold the Wii, and it's sort of like influential in ways. So yeah, good pick.
It's one of those games that it's admittedly not the best game ever made, but right. The amount of fun that I played or excuse me, the amount of fun I had playing it, the sheer time I put into it, it speaks for itself. I think the game was so incredibly clever and so well designed. It deserves a spot. It was truly a I don't know, this enormous point in time that you can say Wii Sports and everyone can relate. Everyone's had experience with the game.
Wait till you play Wii Sports for Nintendo Switch. It's coming out next year, trust me. And don't be surprised if we get the older Smash games released on the Nintendo Switch also. My predictions always come true. I'm going to move along to the N64, and I'm going to put in Blast Corps, because it's one of my favorite video games of all time. Not like one of the best. Like, I wouldn't put on, say, like a list of like the 100 best video games of all time, but if I had to make a list of my 100 favorite video games of all time, at least by Nintendo, it's got to be on the list. Like, this was such a brilliant original concept for a puzzle game. I think we discussed this like way back, like 2 years ago on the podcast. I love just the simple objective. You have to destroy a series of buildings using a variety of unique demolition vehicles.
And it has, of course, a big missile on it, right? Trying to escort a truck with a big nuclear weapon or something.
Exactly. And so it sounds simple, and at the beginning it is. Like, I think when we review this game, we said, like, you know, when you go back and play it at the start, it's so simple. It's kind of easy, but the more you continue to play, it's a puzzle game. It gets harder and harder. And so, unlike traditional puzzle games, like, like a mere second, like, if it takes you, like I don't know, if you just don't react fast enough, like, it's all about reflexes, right? And quick timing. Everything goes wrong. And like, the graphics are dated, sure, because this game was released on the N64, like, way back in 1997. But I still think you can have a lot of fun playing this game even today. I think it was a breath of fresh air, especially for the time. Like, I don't remember any game being quite like Blast Corps back in the days, like, back when it was released in 1997. So, like, I guess the game I always compare it to is Rampage. But, you know, it's so much better and so much more than Rampage, right? Because Rampage is basically like one screen, one building. This is kind of like, it's just like this big, wide area, like this huge map. And I don't know, I love this game. It's, of course, it's by Rare. We should mention that. And they made some of the best games for the N64.
Yeah, and Rampage had no puzzle elements to it. Like, there wasn't really an end goal either. You just smashed buildings, and that was kind of, you know, that was kind of mindless fun. But Blast Corps definitely has challenge to it. There is a goal. You have to know your environment really well, and you're going to have to play some of those stages multiple times to figure out the best route. There's some trial and error in that. But figuring it out, plotting the different ways, and seeing people pull off amazing stuff. The physics in that game were really cool.
So, real quick aside, you guys, there's a lot of series that I have been told I can't put into the Hall of Fame just yet because we want to spotlight them, and that's fair. So there are some series that you won't hear us talk about too much until it's their year, or until they finally give us the fourth in the series, and then we can spotlight them, and then I will put all of them in the Hall of Fame. But there are some series that just don't get that kind of love, that don't get that kind of attention, that just don't come around nearly as frequently. They're more, I don't know, drive-bys, if you will, including Mario Kart. Now,
yeah.
I don't think we're ever going to do a best of Mario Kart episode. I could be wrong. They're just not that frequent. There's not that many. But since I am such an N64 fan, and I do think it is maybe still the best party console of all time, I'm going to go ahead and say Mario Kart 64, which is still maybe the best Mario Kart game ever made, simply because of its battle mode. Like, nothing can quite touch that. Sure, Mario Kart 8 feels flawless, and it's beautiful and gorgeous, and it probably deserves a spot on this list. But I'm going to start with 64, which gave us that brilliant, brilliant battle mode. The donut with the lava in the center, those block towers on that one stage that I never remember the name to. So good, on top of some of the best courses in Mario Kart history, including 64's Rainbow Road is still so good. The game played fantastic. It still does. It's still fun. It holds up. It looks a little goofy, but I love the game. So it gets a spot in the Hall of Fame now, finally.
You know, what's funny, Tim, is that we had a writer publish an article about listing, like, ranking the Mario Kart Hearts. I am totally with you with it. 64 is either 1 or 2 in the series for me. He ranked it at 6 which out
is,
of 8.
Which is wrong. Like
totally wrong. Like this was one of the most, this is the game that basically started Mario Kart. Yes, there was Mario Kart for the SNES, but if you go back and play that game, it's a really, really basic version of what
it's
now Mario Kart has
compared
become.
To, it's nothing.
This is much closer. Super Mario 64 is basically what started the Mario Kart. It's the link to the past, if you will, that sort of started them down on how they were going to treat the series. And I still think, yes, it has the best multiplayer maps. It has some of the most iconic courses. It plays fantastically. Its battle mode is unparalleled.
It's weird because I would like to say Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, because it now has battle mode, and that game, like Tim says, is perfectly flawless. The thing is I'm just way better at the 64 version, and I mean, I'm okay in Mario Kart 8 or 8 Deluxe, but when I play with people who are really good, I just suck. So, like, that's why I tend to like the older games, just because I'm better, but yeah, I agree with you guys. Like, this game is on, like, top 3, if not number 2 when it comes to the Mario Kart series, and clearly it belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, the only one I could maybe see pushing it out of top 2 is if you like Double Dash more, and I can totally understand that, but it's
I love Double Dash. I love Double Dash, but the battle mode is what kind of solidifies it as my probably top pick.
I played Mario Kart battle mode just as much as I played GoldenEye and Perfect Dark battle modes. So that tells you how good it is. It's so good. So good. All right. So my last pick is going to be, I'm going to go back to the GameCube era then. And I think this is one of the best like launch titles on any system Nintendo's had. Maybe rivaled only, well, I can't say only by Super Mario 64, but it is an incredible launch title when you consider the history of recent modern consoles. And that is Rogue Leader for the GameCube. I love Rogue Leader. I still think it's one of the best Star Wars games ever made. I still think that game holds up against modern Star Wars games like Battlefront and all that kind of stuff. I think it was the first Star Wars game that actually transported me to a galaxy far, far away. And it just stuck with what was so great about the N64 Shadows of the Empire. The stage that everybody loved was the Battle of Hoth and flying the Snowspeeder. And from there, it went to, Rogue Squadron. So that was a great game for the Super NES, and it used the pack that they had to, or I'm sorry, the Nintendo 64, and it used the pack that they had to sort of enhance the graphics and all that kind of stuff. But it really came to fruition with Rogue Leader, which is so perfectly balanced in every facet, like just from having gorgeous visuals, amazing controls. They picked a mix of iconic moments with brand new things. It just really, everything about that game made you feel like you were piloting a ship in the Star Wars universe. And there's not a single lightsaber in the game, but it still is absolutely amazing. I've loved that game. That game, every time I see footage of it, it still gives me kind of chills to go through that. There was so much to unlock. Unfortunately, it was followed up by Rebel Strike, which was a poorer effort, but Rebel Strike still has the entire Rogue Leader as an unlockable, so there you go. Yeah, Rogue Leader for me, I think it's one of the best Star Wars games, if for me not the best Star Wars game of all time. It is the best, I think. In my opinion, the best Star Wars game.
I'm not even going to argue, because I like Battlefront 1 more than I like Battlefront 2. So I'm not even going to argue that this is probably the best sequel for a Star Wars game.
Yeah, I read your article on Battlefront. I was kind of like confused because it looks amazing, but wrong show, right? It's a Nintendo show. I don't really remember enough about the Star Wars games. I think we talked about this when we reviewed the Super Nintendo versions, Super Star Wars, Super Empire Strikes Back, and Super Return of the Jedi. The thing about those games for the GameCube is I've played them, but I never played them from start to finish because I never owned them. It was one of those things like where I would rent them at the video store, but someone stole the actual... You know when people would rent games and never return it? So someone stole it. So I never really had a chance to ever finish it. But what I did play, I love. So I'm trusting you that it belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Yep, it's a classic.
All right, so my pick needs no introduction because it's like the greatest game ever made. And I don't really have to talk about why. It's Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3. That's it. We've talked about it. Love this game. No, for real. Like, this is the final game to use the classic formula. I think of the first three games, like, I think Tim and you and I talked about this on the podcast briefly. Some people choose two, some people choose three as a personal favorite. It's sort of like a coin toss. I think three has somewhat of an edge. Yes, it did get released on the PlayStation 2 at the time, but I, for whatever reason, was playing on my GameCube, even though I owned a PlayStation 2. Same. And yeah, and like, I just think that, like, you know, the first two games sort of like set the bar, but the sequel pretty much jumped that bar of quality and landed at like a perfect 180 tailspin or manual or whatever kind of trick you're trying to pull. Like, it's just like, this game is like, even today I can still play this game for hours. I love this game. I put in so much time into playing this game. I think it pretty much perfected the Tony Hawk formula. There's just so much to love about this game. The roster, the moveset. Yeah, Part 3, that's my jam, man. Love this game.
I have really, really fond memories of 2, but I probably sunk more time into 3, so I'm not going to argue that. And some of the stages in 3 were so remarkably rad. Like, the ferry level is such a clever idea, or that level in Japan or wherever. Played that level for so many hours alone. So,
it had better combos, better levels, more play modes, the music, like the soundtrack was better. Everything about it was just better and bigger.
Having never played a Tony Hawk game ever before, I'm going to go with Ride. Just because it had the cool skateboard that came along with it. Doesn't that automatically make it better?
Yeah. Peripherals makes the game.
I don't know how I ever missed these games, but I've never played a Tony Hawk game. It just never ran across this. I guess we weren't really big skateboarders in my family. We tried early on and we fell too much, so it just never happened. Yeah, if it had been a biking game instead, maybe, you know, a BMX game, I might have been able to get more on board with it. But because I didn't skate, and none of my friends did for some reason either, I don't know why. But I never played one of those.
It's funny because I don't think we ever got a really amazing BMX game for a Nintendo system, although there were a few good ones that I've played. But I still BMX, like I still have a BMX, and I do not skateboard anymore, but I used to skateboard a lot. So
that's awesome. Those are good memories there. So speaking of good memories, there is a game that I have kind of treated not as well as I should have, because my allegiances lie elsewhere, but this is in many ways admittedly the better game, and I didn't play its multiplayer nearly as much as I did, say, I don't know, GoldenEye 007, but Patrick, you already mentioned it once on the episode, Perfect Dark was one of the best games on the N64, and it's still one of my favorite shooters. It had one of the most influential multiplayers right along 007. I think it kind of paved the way for shooters as we know them today. And so when you think, man, really, another Call of Duty, why is this happening? You can blame Rare and Perfect Dark because it was so sensational back in the day.
Now, we've reviewed this on our podcast. We spent about 45 minutes talking about this game. I like it more than GoldenEye 007. Now, I would have picked this game today and put it into the Hall of Fame, but I thought it was already into the Hall of Fame. But if not, then that would have been my number one pick.
Yeah, it's not in there.
I re-looked, and then I scratched my head because I thought it was.
Yep, and GoldenEye's in there, but not this one.
Yeah, and I think I put GoldenEye in there. They both need to be in, is the thing. And so the fact that I didn't see it three different times today when I triple-checked, I knew my pick. I knew I was going to save it for last because I think it's one of those games that is truly a hallmark, not only for like Nintendo and the N64, but it really helped shape the industry as we see it today. It's such an influential game. And you go back and you play games like this, and they don't necessarily hold up as well as you remember, but you get some remakes on, say, like, there was one for Xbox that was totally worth picking up if you want to get sort of a feel for what it was like, but back in the day, before twin sticks were really a thing. So, yeah, phenomenal game, so well designed, such a great world. It's basically I don't know, GoldenEye 007 meets Blade Runner. It's fantastic. I love it.
Okay, I highly recommend. I'm going to like pimp out my article here. I wrote this article. I think it's like 2,000 plus words. It's called Joanna Dark versus James Bond: Why Perfect Dark is Better than GoldenEye 007. So Google that. It's on goombastomp.com. God, I love this game, Tim. Love this game. It's like one of my all-time favorites.
Perfect and I thought, Dark. I thought it was on our list. I legitimately did, and then I didn't see it. And I was like, what the hell happened? Like,
no, well, you know, yeah. You're probably confusing. We definitely talked about it for the best game, N64 games and stuff like that. And it had its own rare day. So we definitely discussed it, like Rick said, for 45 minutes. But no, it never made the lists, strangely enough. But it's an amazing game. Perfect Dark with Mario Kart 64 is probably the game I sunk the most time into on the N64.
Throw in Smash and we're like on the same page.
Yeah, and I'd never played Smash on the N64. Well, I played it, but I never owned it, so I never had that much playtime put into it. But my friend and I, we played Perfect Dark cooperatively because we figured out that we couldn't stand each other when we played too much competitive. So we played a lot of Capture the Flag and just got used to setting traps with, you know, computer miniguns and all sorts of laptop miniguns. Those are the best. Love those things.
It's a shame that this game never got a sequel, guys.
No. What?
It's a shame this game never got a sequel, guys.
Right. You're right.
Yeah.
Ba-dum-bum.
All right. Anyway, that does it for our Hall of Fame. We didn't quite get to 50, maybe next time, but we are at our time limit, so we're gonna cut it short. Gives us a lot more to look forward to in 20 episodes now, since, you know, after 100, you can kind of switch things up and no one notices. So now every 20 episodes, you can look forward to another Hall of Fame, which means you got to keep listening to us here at N-Express. You should also check out all of the work of Patrick Murphy online. Where can we find you, Patrick?
You can find me at Goomba Stomp. I recently, you know, as listeners know, Tim and I were at E3, and both Tim and I have pumped out lots of E3 articles. I still have one more to do, and I'll be done. I can't wait till it's over, honestly. But yeah, you can find me writing on Goomba Stomp, and of course, you can follow us here on Twitter at N-Express Nintendo.
Sweet. How about you, Ricky? Where are you?
Well, you can email us, the show, the host, at editor@goombastomp.com, editor@goombastomp.com. On Twitter, I handle the official Twitter handle for Goomba Stomp, which is Goomba Stomp Mag, M-A-G at the end. You can find us on Facebook, Tumblr. You can find me writing just about each and every single day over goombastomp.com. And we are also on LinkedIn, Instagram, Pinterest, and I'm sure I'm missing something. But yeah, and if you want to listen to our show, if you listen on iTunes, do us a favor, give us a rating, please. Yes. It really does help us out. And you can listen to the show on SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, of course, on the actual website. There's a ton of places where you can listen to the show.
Yeah, do us a solid. It helps the show so much and gives us unbelievable opportunities like going to E3 or PAX West is coming up, and we're probably going to have people there, so that should be really cool stuff to look forward to.
And it gives us plenty of joy.
Yeah,
we know that somebody too. Likes us.
Yep. So share some love. I'm Tim Mason. You can find me at The Freemason, M-A-I-S-O-N, on Twitter. Ask me anything. My favorite game of E3. I have plenty of opinions. Lots of love for stuff like Mario Odyssey. Also, keep your eye peeled to GoombaStomp.com. I have a review of Ever Oasis coming pretty shortly here as I'm finishing up that game. And, yeah, outside of that, I think plug the show, I guess, one more time. Keep listening to N-Express. Next week, we'll be kind of back to our normal routine, talking about different games, including ARMS, We Did Not Forget About You, and probably Ever Oasis, but we'll have to wait and see next week what's actually going to happen. So keep it tuned here to N-Express. Talk to you later.